This episode is brought to you by All Out Security. This episode is brought to you by All Out Security.
Quest Oracle Community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, how's it going today?
It's going pretty good, Chandra. Thank you. We're back to recording on the weekends. I see. All right. Well, it is what it is.
We just got to do what we got to do to get it done.
Yeah. Well, let's see what's happening. In the last couple of weeks, I think the big thing is our former guest, John Holder. He hit me up about his band. Their latest track just came out on a compilation called Electric Saviors, Industrial Music to Cure Cancer, Volume 7, Reunion. It's from Distortion Productions on Metropolis Records, and it's actually available on all the streaming services like Bootcamp, YouTube, Spotify, all of it. So I downloaded the compilation and checked out their track. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty cool. So for you, those of you interested, check out John's work, him and his band. I'm sure he would appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that with me. I enjoyed it as well. And as a note to our listeners, John Holder came on for episode 51 and 52 to discuss virtual batch queues. So if you haven't listened to those two episodes, I encourage you to head over and download those.
Yeah, very talented. Plays bass, guitars. I think he even did some of the mixing on this track. So,
wow.
Again, pretty talented guy. So,
yeah, no kidding.
And he knows everything about the batch engine. So, there you go. All right. Well, you know, we didn't get too far with security last time. So, maybe we'll get a little further this time.
Hey,
is that what we're talking about
goals.
This week?
Well, there you go. Good to have goals.
Yes. Oh, but aren't we supposed to just enjoy the process? Didn't we talk about that earlier?
We did. That's how we learn. We learn through the process.
I see. Yeah. We used to say that in the martial arts all the time because people were always chasing that next belt, right? They wanted to get to the, you know, when am I going to test? And that was something that you found out early on. You were never allowed to ask because as soon as you ask, then you definitely were not testing that month. And, you're always told to focus on the process, enjoy the process, enjoy the journey. Yeah, everybody's on their own journey. So learn to value that over the achievement. The achievement doesn't last very long because you're always on to the next goal. So enjoy the process.
Exactly. Enjoy the process.
All right. Well, last time I think we talked about application, action, row, column, but I think you made the point as we were shutting down that day that we probably should have pointed out that none of that really matters. If what?
Well, if you don't have it on your menu and you don't have FastPath access, you won't see it. And you won't be able to get access to it. So if you're whoever does this in your particular company, whether it's your CNC or your BAs, maybe your developers do it, who knows. If you don't have the Solution Explorer set up for the, in our case, the role to have it on their menu, doesn't really do any good. Because we don't allow most of our users to have any FastPath access. There's very few people that have FastPath access. So,
okay.
So yeah, it does not really matter.
Okay. Well, it's a very good point. I mean, you first have to give them some way to navigate, obviously, and launch the actual application before you have to worry about what level of security to apply to said application. So totally makes sense. Speaking of those security types that we covered last time, I guess we also failed to talk about what the actual, like the number is.
Yeah, the number or letter. Some of them are letters. But yes, when you go to the actual security workbench and you maybe you want to filter on your action code security or your application code security, there's a column called security type. And we did not name what those were for the application, action, row, and column security. So application security is security type 3. Action security is security type 1. Row security is security type 4. And column security is security type 2.
I just have to say, I'm so happy that we make things intuitive because 1 being action security, 2 being column security. We jump from action to column, back to application, and then to row. So I'm guessing that the type sequential didn't matter.
I don't know. You'd have to go talk to your team to figure out who set that up and why. I've often wondered.
I'm like, I'm trying to follow these numbers. And I'm like, well, if we put a period, we got 3.12 or 142. I'm like, is this pi? I mean, what is this?
Almost. Maybe somebody was having a little fun in the back.
Maybe. All right. Well, but speaking of sequential or hierarchical, something else that we didn't bring up, but probably applies, you know, more broadly would be the security hierarchy. Like with all these different types of security, that's fine. Right. And you can do it at the user level or the group level or the star public level. But how does the system actually search and select which security to apply where? Right. I mean, we didn't cover that either. So did you want to take us through the hierarchy?
Oh, I'd love to. This one took me a little while to get my arms around it. It was like one of those, moments. It took me a second. So you have your version level security for the user. Then you have your batch application level security for your user. Then you have star all level security for the user. Then it goes to version level security for the group, batch application level security for the group, star all level security for the group, and then version level security for star public. Batch application level security for star public and star all level security for star public. But okay. I should note, when it finds one of those, it stops. So it's not like it always goes through all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 steps every time.
No, I mean, obviously, once it gets a hit, then it's done. So you can see it's going to go user group, star public, and it's going to follow that pattern of version batch star all, version batch star all. So it just repeats that pattern at the various levels. And like you said, once it gets a hit, then it's done. Thank goodness. So if you're ever curious why certain settings may not be getting hit, you're going to have to remember the hierarchy. So I'm guessing that at some point, you probably almost wrote that down on the side to be like,
kind of, yeah. As I was learning, like, which one is it doing first? You know, as you're newer and learning and kind of troubleshooting, I kind of needed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very important to remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, picking up then from where we left off, next on the list is security type 5, which is processing options. So why don't you walk us through the processing option security?
So setting security to prohibit your users from prompting for versions doesn't necessarily prevent them from changing the values in the processing option. So if you don't want users to use processing option values, definitely want to secure them so that they're not prompt for values or prompt for versions. But processing option security does allow you to change prompt for values or prompt for versions. So you can set each one of those depending on the application or UBE that you're launching.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, I mean, alongside processing options, right? Especially if you're thinking batch, then the next thing you have to consider is data selection, right?
Yes.
So there's data selection security. Now, that security, though, when you set that up, it really only applies to the web client, right? So if you're launching a batch app from a web client, then you can control whether or not the user gets prompted for data selection and can actually modify it.
Correct. So they can then, that security will allow them to change the data selection for a report or UBE, whatever, however you want to refer to it. It's important also to note that, like for me, in my production environment, if I launch a UBE, I can't go to the form data security option. Mm. They have used the hyper exit security, which we will talk about in a minute.
Oh, the form data selection option, you mean?
Yes, sorry, form data selection. I am not able to do that. If it walks you through it as part of the process when you're submitting the UBE, where it prompts you for the data selection, I can change a data selection there, but I can't go to form data selection.
So in other words, you can't change it for everybody. Mm-hmm. But you can access it for the one instance that you're actually launching at that point.
Correct.
So
correct.
If you can't really set it up for everybody else, but you can manipulate it as you use it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, that makes sense.
Kind of a neat little thing to keep in mind for people if they want to secure things down a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it starts to get obviously complicated. There's a lot of things to consider. You know, at what level do you want people to be able to choose a version or manipulate values, or what level of control do they need to be able to actually do their job and do their job well? Right.
Correct. And not screw anybody else up. You know, we'll have it. We definitely have had it where somebody has run something with bad data selection in it. And then the next person that goes to submit it, you know, is like, why is this not working? Well, the data selection was monkeyed with.
Yeah, I think a enhancement suggestion I recall a while back was to be able to give people a good compare tool for their data selection and processing option compares between PY and PD, or to allow you to almost baseline your versions and data selection in PD, so that you could always go back and do a comparison that if something, because sometimes something does change, like suddenly something's running much longer than you expect, or, you know, obviously you're not getting the results that you were expecting. And of course you call up Oracle and say, you broke the software. And we say, well, what did you change? And of course the answer is nothing. Always nothing. It just one day the software just, you know, the code expired. And
the
just
code
decided
changed
to
on
stuff. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean,
it happens all the time.
I mean, maybe in the world of AI, I mean, we'll get there. But I mean, right now, sorry, I haven't written the JD Edwards algorithm that is self-composing or expiring. Right. So anyway, it was just, you know, a good idea is to be able to actually, you know, set that, be able to compare, because people do go in there and occasionally make a change and it's not something you would see easily. And the next thing you know, you've got results that you never saw. Everything was running smoothly for 9 months and now all of a sudden it's not. So definitely a good thing to probably check first.
Yeah.
When something squirrels and goes left on you, let's make sure nobody messed around with, you know, the data selection or processing options that they shouldn't have.
So. Yeah, it is a little bit tedious when you are troubleshooting to have to go into like view job status or submitted jobs, figure out what did the user submit, and then maybe find who else submitted this version recently, what was their data selection, you know, look in PY, what was the data selection there? Hopefully it hasn't been monkeyed with down there, where I definitely go in and monkey with things in PY all the time because I'm testing different things, right?
So, right. So where do you have it? Where do you have a good copy? Do you have a good copy? Because we don't necessarily baseline those things and save them off. And maybe that's something that would be a good idea for us to be able to say, okay, once you get the system configured the way that you want it, we're going to take a snapshot of these versions. And that way you can say, look, this is the base version that we have. And you could do a comparison or a periodic check if things have changed. Because maybe you're still getting good results, but somebody did change something and you didn't know it and you still want to double check, but we don't necessarily give you a good way of making that comparison. And I can understand it does get tedious, you know, especially on some of these batches and some of these interactive applications have a significant amount of processing options to go through. So it's not to be taken lightly.
Yes, I definitely have done compares between, you know, you go into your purchase order entry P4310 and you look at all the processing options and you're comparing production to PY. And I know there's a couple tools out there that do this for you. There are vendors that have a tool, or at least one vendor does, I know of, that I have used in a past life that does that. It can do that compare really easy, which was really nice for upgrade.
Yeah.
To make sure everything was set appropriately. So very helpful.
Very, very helpful. I can imagine.
Support for this program comes from All Out Security, trusted experts in JD Edwards security and compliance. For 21 years, All Out's native JDE solutions have helped over 500 organizations worldwide streamline access maintenance, meet SOD requirements, consolidate reporting, and stay audit ready. Their scalable toolset evolves with your business needs, aligning to any GRC objective at any stage. Designed for cross-functional impact, All Out helps IT, compliance, and audit teams minimize risk, simplify processes, and stay in control. There's no doubt with All Out. Learn more at alloutsecurity.com.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's the next type of security we're going to go through?
Let's talk hyper exit security, since I just mentioned it. That would be the logical flow. Yeah, I know.
Okay, so you want these things to, like, you know, prompt one
Makes
another.
Sense.
So you mentioned that you don't have access to the hyper exit for data selection from the work with batch versions.
Yes.
That would have been controlled by, I see where you're going.
Right. Yeah. You're tracking what I'm laying down. Way to go.
I'm picking up what you're laying down. All right. We're cooking with gas, people.
Here Watch out. All right. Hyper exit security, which is security type 6. And that one comes right after processing option security type 5.
Hey.
Look at us go. So with that security from your menu, the form menu, or maybe it's your row menu, you can allow users to be able to manipulate the data, really, is what it allows you to do. So whether you're going to go in and go form data selection, like we just talked about, or form processing options and make changes there.
Right. So hyper exit security, not to be confused with push button security, that would be separate. So
yes,
even though you may feel like you're pushing a button when you hit that little form, never mind. I don't want to go there. Anyway, let's just make it all confusing. But yes, hyper exit. So if you don't want them to be able to take any row or form exits, or a row or a form exit,
then
this is what you would use. All right. So now,
correct.
I mean, just for context, now we're obviously in an interactive application and now we're controlling your exits. But also within an interactive application, you have tabs. So assuming you have access to the app, now you can actually secure them out of which tabs they can actually click on and manipulate the data on or view the data on. Is that correct?
Correct. And that is your tab security, which is security type A. So as you explained, you can prevent them from changing the name or viewing different tabs. You can say, nope, they can't see anything that's on this tab. That comes in handy in certain applications for sure within JD Edwards, where you may not want people to see any information that is on, maybe it's on the address book. You know, you don't want them to see any of the category code fields. So you don't give them access to that tab.
No, that makes sense. And you also control whether or not that it can actually rename a tab.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
True there. Yep.
And then I did see this note about, like, combining, often trying to, again, when you're looking at how you're going to use this, right? So you would potentially combine this with something like column security to really control exactly what the user can edit.
Correct. So when you combine, you know, maybe you do give them tab security, but you want to restrict the fields that they can update on there. So it's a good combination using the column security to say, okay, you can see that entire tab, but you can only change these three fields, and that's it.
Do you guys use that much?
Yeah, we definitely have tab security in place, really in place in our address book. We also have it in place for our job master. and actually in some of our time card stuff as well, and fixed assets. Yeah, we've got it in a bunch of places, actually. We have quite a few records, job personnel. We restrict some stuff there. So we definitely do use this.
Yeah, I mean, we make a lot of these applications kind of all-inclusive. We didn't make individual versions of each, like purpose-built versions of each. Instead, we made kind of a catch-all universal app that can handle all the different business processes, all the different use cases. The problem with that is that's a lot of data, right? And there's a lot of tabs and there's a lot of information. And when you want people to be focused and you don't want them getting distracted with information that is irrelevant, nor do you want them manipulating anything that they shouldn't have authority to manipulate. I could see where this comes in. And this becomes a really, I mean, is this a lot of work?
It is. It's very much a complicated beast, I always say. Mm-hmm. But on the plus side, boy, can you do a lot with it.
Sure. So there's a lot of flexibility in there, which is good.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But it can feel overwhelming at times, especially if you're doing like a new implementation. Oh, goodness. I have not done a full new implementation ever. Mm-hmm. I've always come into where it's already been in existence for a while.
Always inherited.
Okay. I've inherited. Yes, I've always inherited. I can't even imagine how overwhelming that must be for somebody, especially if they don't have a ton of security experience. But especially if you're going back to the business to say, okay, on this application, do you want people to see everything? Who do you want to see this information in the address book? That takes a while to map out.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure many of our business partners out there have good practices, good business processes around, or good methodologies, if you will, around helping refine this in a very methodical way, because it's definitely not something that you just want to attack willy-nilly. So, all right, well, we're in the app. Clearly, we had access to the app. Otherwise, we wouldn't worry about tab security, right? You're not going to set up tab security if you've already blocked them from actually using the app. But if you do have tab security, then you can't really go set up this next set of security. So that's your exclusive application security, which is what type is that?
That would be type 9.
Okay.
Yes. Security type 9, which does flow after 8. So yay for us getting a couple more. Sequential. Yay!
We're so easily pleased.
I know.
I'm sorry.
We're so easily amused.
It's Saturday. You've ran 11 miles. You're a little tired. Guess what? It's the little things that just...
You get a little punchy. You successfully completed your quarterly patching and your patch testing.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a weekend already, and it's only Saturday afternoon. Great.
For some. Anyway.
Yeah. True.
All right. So what do you use exclusive app security for?
So this allows you to grant access to information that may otherwise be secured to a user. So for example, let's say you use row security and you secure a user from seeing maybe a range of salary information, but a user might need to run a report for payroll that would include salary information. So you can grant access to the report, including that salary information, by using exclusive application security. And for us, we absolutely do this in payroll, of course. We definitely have exclusive application security on for quite a few things within payroll. So they might be able to run a report or run an application that allows them to see data that they can't otherwise see because they are secured from it.
Interesting. So this effectively trumps your row security. It allows you to basically say, okay, here's an exception. Like I set up my row security and say, look, you cannot see this range of data, but in this particular instance, I'll grant you access to an application that would allow you to see that range, which is okay. That may, again, not necessarily be intuitive, but
well, I mean, you know,
we got 9 after 8, but you know, that's about as far as we're going to get.
I don't know what to say to that one.
No, it's all good. Yeah.
With that, I think we should wrap up this episode so that we try to keep it into our 30-minute window.
Okay.
I know we're trying, but I know sometimes we still fail miserably. And of course, we're still not all the way through the security workbench. So we will have another future episode to talk about additional security, such as the application query security, your data browser security, your media object security, that sort of stuff. So we'll get through a few more security types, not necessarily in numeric order, though, just so you know.
No, we might not expect that anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, right?
My expectations are low. All right. Well, what are we doing for a Midwesternism?
Well, that's a very good question. Actually, we're going to continue with our theme of games, since we are going to Vegas for Blueprint in a couple weeks. And we're going to talk about bar dice.
Oh,
I'm actually
yes.
going to turn this one over to you because I think you have, in our discussions prior to, you know, recording, you definitely have a lot more experience with bar dice than I do. So I'm going to let you talk about bar dice.
I mean, hopefully people have picked up on this. I mean, I am probably the gambler of this podcast. So
I would concur.
The recovering accountant doesn't like to separate herself from her money, but the non-recovering accountant has absolutely no problem separating himself from money. So anyway, bar dice, yes. And to your point, yeah, we're going to Vegas. There's a lot of different dice games. The primary one most people probably know about is craps. So in the Midwest, though, we play bar dice, and you're either playing with a bunch of friends or you're just playing with a bartender. It's a fun way to figure out who's going to pay for drinks, basically. So there's a lot of different variations. I got my first exposure actually to bar dice when I went to the Packerland user group. This was pre-COVID days, might have been 2018, 2019, I'm not sure. And I didn't play the traditional bar dice that time. So traditional bar dice, you've got, I believe, five dice, and you each roll the dice, you know, I think three times, and you're trying to get the best hand. And ones are considered aces, and they're considered wild, and you're trying to get basically as many of the same number as you can. So four threes is better than three fives, but it's not better than, say, five deuces. So you're just trying to get a high hand, and if you get a high hand, then you're out, and you don't have to play the next round. And so it whittles down until there's only two left, and whoever ends up losing is, of course, the one that then pays for beers or takes the shot or whatever is at stake at that point in time. So that's traditional. What I ended up playing actually at the time was ship, captain, and crew. It's just another variation where, you know, you're trying to get, I believe it's a 6-5-4, and then whatever the other two dice are, right? And the highest score of the other two dice, I believe, wins, right? So you want as many, you know, that's basically, I guess, if you think of it as cargo, right? You want the most cargo. So you got your ship, which is your six, you get your five, which is your captain, you get your four, which is a crew. Once you have ship, captain, crew, then you can take on or get cargo. And so whoever has the most cargo after your three rolls actually wins. And you play it the same way, right? Whoever wins doesn't have to continue, and you whittle down till you're down to two, and then whoever loses is the one that actually pays. So just a couple different variations, but definitely very popular in the, I'd say, bars in Wisconsin. I'm assuming that the same can be said about Minnesota.
You know, that's a good question, because I think the couple times I've played bar dice, it's been in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a Wisconsin thing. I just wasn't sure if it was, you know, more broad. But
my guess is it is, but, you know, I'll do a little research and get back to you.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe when we go up for the Minnesota State Fair, we can just pop into a few bars and we'll find out. You know, we'll do some direct research, you know, market
some reconnaissance.
Some reconnaissance. There we go. Awesome. Cool.
All right. For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at thejdeconnection@questoraclecommunity.org. Also, don't forget to like or subscribe to our podcast. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya! Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.